Hey everyone, this is our last episode of the season, and we thought we'd do something a little different for the holidays. Today you're going to hear five people tell stories about gifts they've either given or received. Not material gifts, but ones from the heart, stories told in their own words. And we'd love to hear from you too. What's the greatest gift you've ever been given? Tell us by visiting us at facebook.com/crazygoodturns and comment on the top video featuring Janice Martinez, the woman you'll hear from shortly. We look forward to hearing from you.
I'm Janice Martinez, and I am a retired executive. I owned my own executive search firm for 33 years. Love being retired because now I'm a volunteer. I'm going to tell you a story how it was told to me. It's in a home with three little girls and a mom and a dad, and they're very, very poor. The mom had to go to the grocery store, so she asked the neighbor to come over and take care of the girls. Well, one, the little two-year-old, was down on the sofa because she had a really bad cold, and the mom didn't want the other two to get it, so she had them be upstairs. Well, the two-year-old was covered in Vicks, sitting on the sofa. The mom goes to the grocery store. The next-door neighbor goes back home to check on her bacon. The grocery store was literally right across the street. While the woman was gone, the little girl reached down in the sofa cushions and found a box of matches. And she lit the matches. And she went up in flames as if somebody had poured kerosene over her. Her older sister upstairs, Linda, heard her screaming and came down, pulled her off the sofa and to the front screen door. The mom had come back from the grocery store and was talking to a delivery man out front. She looked over and saw the little girl. She had her hands up in the air, and she thought she was holding two orange balls and realized she was on fire. So the mother ran in. The delivery man kept screaming, "Wrap her in a rug, wrap her in the rug." So rolled her up in the rug, and the delivery man and the mom went to the hospital. And because they had no money, they went to the charity hospital. So the mom came into the hospital and into the emergency area, and they took the baby from her, and then they treated the mother's hands because the mother had second-degree burns on her hands. And after she was treated, the mom went out to try to look for her little girl, and so she went up to the pediatric floor, and people were rushing in and out of this room with blood and buckets of ice, and she thought, oh my gosh, that baby must be dying. So she goes down to the nurse's station, and she asks for her daughter. And the nurse puts her arm around her and walks her down to the room where, indeed, this baby was definitely dying. She was running 105 to 106 fever constantly. The doctor said that if she lives, she'll be brain damaged. She'll never have children. When you are burned, your body quits making red blood cells. Red blood cells carry the oxygen to your organs. So you hear a lot of times when people are burned that they died of organ failure. And that's why. This baby needed a lot of blood transfusions. And they ran out of B-positive blood. So the call went out in Richmond, Virginia. The call went out for blood. And a truck driver from New Jersey was coming through town and he heard the call. He stopped and he not only gave blood, but he donated skin. And this is a dreadful process. Very, very painful. So this man really was a major donor here. The mother, when she'd come to visit, she had to wait in a waiting room because the baby had a sterile room. And she had to wait in the waiting room until they were ready for her to come in. And she noticed over to the side, there was this little room that when the parents would go in there, they always came out crying. And so the mom referred to that as the death room. So about 45 days after the incident had happened, the mother was sitting in the waiting room, and the nurse asked her to go into that little room. Through this whole process, the mother kept fighting God. You cannot have her. You can't have her. She's mine. You can't have her. So she goes into the room, and there's this little table sitting there, a chair there, two chairs here. She sits down and she puts her hands down on the table and puts her head on the table and says, "God, if you really need her, you can have her." And at that point, the doctor walked in, had a big smile on his face. He said, her fever broke. She's going to make it. There were many, many, many surgeries, a lot of plastic surgery, lots of x-rays, lots of stuff done to this baby. And I can't even tell you how many surgeries, but her last major one was when she was 20. You know, life goes on, and she had two children and has a grandson, and she donates blood regularly. She's donated 129 pints, and she does this because she wants to save a two-year-old baby, too.
And where is she now?
Right here in front of you.
Can you just explain the process for donating skin? Because when we all heard it, we just hadn't even heard of it. So can you just talk to us about that?
Well, they literally take like a shaver. And the only reason I know is because I had to donate my own skin to me in that 20-year-old surgery. And that was really, really hard. And they take a shaver and they shave the skin off and then they put it on the area that they need to cover with additional skin.
So the truck driver from Virginia that had no idea who you were went through that
horrible process.
Do you think about him a lot?
A lot. I'm sure he's dead because I'm 70.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, yeah.
Jam, what's your wish for this holiday season?
During the holidays and summer, the colleges are out and they run very low on blood. You can give a gift that gives life and doesn't cost any money. So I would like everybody to donate blood.
My name is David Deutschman, and I have lived in Atlanta for the last 40-some years. Before that, I lived in Boston, and my roots go back to the Bronx.
So, David, what's your story?
Well, I retired in about 15 years ago, and I wanted to be doing something with my life. So I started guest lecturing and worked at Georgia Tech, Georgia State, and Emory doing lectures on international marketing. It was really great, but I wasn't using very much of my time. So I decided to look for other things. And one day, I found myself in the parking lot that Scottish Rite shares with a medical building right next door to it. And after I was finished with a little rehab for a running injury, I decided to walk into Scottish Rite and see if they had any volunteer openings. And I happened to meet with the woman who was the director of volunteer services. And I ended up working there a week later. The question was, what will I do there? And I initially started in their school, which they used to help the patients keep up with their schoolwork, especially if it's a longer-term patient. And one of the things we had to do is go up to the rooms to escort the children down to the school. Well, one day, two things happened that really changed my life. I walked into a room to escort a kid, and the mom said, oh, she's going into surgery this morning. And I said, oh, okay, well, I wish you luck, and I'll check back with you this afternoon to see how you're doing. And as I walked out of the room, she followed me and started to tell me every detail of the kid's medical problem and the surgery she was facing and the challenges that she would have. And I thought it was interesting that this woman would open up to a virtual stranger about such personal matters. But I went over to the elevator to wait for her to pick up a second kid. And it was on the same floor as the PICU, the Pediatric Intensive Care Unit. And a young mom is walking out of there as I'm standing at the elevator. She did not look good. And when she came up to my side, I said, hey, you okay? And she said, no. She said, my son was flown in last night. And with that, she fell into my arms and started crying. After those two events, at the end of the school session, I went to the volunteer office and told them, I now know what I want to do here. I want to come into contact with the parents as well as the children, because I felt very comfortable talking to them. And within a week, I was in the PICU. One day, one of the nurses was holding a baby out by the nursing station. And that's unusual because it means that the baby is not hooked up to anything. She can be taken out of the crib and be held anywhere. You can walk around with her. So the nurse said to me, "Hey, David, you want to hold this baby?" So I hold it. It was a little peanut of a thing. And I held the baby. And the child life supervisor from NICU walked by. And she said, "Hey, you can hold babies? Come on down to NICU. I've got a spot for you." And that started my career in NICU. Now, there, primarily, we are holding babies or, in some cases, holding mom's hand, which is very important, too. You know, you're holding babies for different reasons down there. Over the last 10 years, there have been so many studies written about how babies benefit from being held when they're very young. And we started holding babies that may have been sleeping. 8 years ago, we might have said, "Well, let's not make waves. The baby's sleeping. Let it sleep." Now the nurses will take the baby out, sleeping out of the crib and say, and pass it to me or other people. By the way, there are quite a few what we call baby buddies working in the NICU, so I'm not unique, okay? Mm-hmm. But we would be holding babies who are, sometimes they're premature or low birth weights. I got an awful lot of pleasure out of this. You know, I felt like I'm not helping the kid. The kid's helping me.
In what way?
I'm getting more. Well, you know, it transmits a warmth and a love, if you will. Taking a baby who is crying and upset and talking to him softly and stroking the side of his head and what we call up there loving on him, and the kid calms down, that means something to me. You know, it just makes you feel good, like I did something today. Yeah. You know, there's not a day, in fact, that I ever leave there and don't think to myself, this was a good day. I did something important.
So you've become somewhat nationally famous as the NICU grandpa.
Well,
how has that changed your life?
Some of the people I never knew in the hospital are all coming up to me saying, "Oh, you're the ICU grandpa." They give me a hug. But also the parents are recognizing it. And the way that came about is really funny. I was in the PICU, where we don't have a lot of little babies, but they had a preemie up there who was born in Columbus, Georgia, and came down to our place. And a nurse said to me, "Hey, David, we've got a little peanut over there in this room, and he's awake. Do you want to hold him?" So I said, "Sure." So I picked him up and put him in my arms, and he fell asleep. And the mom walked in, and she was so excited that her baby was being held. And she said, "Who are you?" And instead of saying, "Oh, I'm a volunteer," I said, "I'm the ICU grandpa." So she says, "Do you mind if I take a picture of you?" So I said, "Sure." So she takes a picture, and that's a Tuesday. On Wednesday, the volunteer office called me and said, "Do you mind if you have that picture shown on Facebook?" I said, "Fine, do whatever you want with it." Thursday, the day after it's on Facebook, CHOA, meaning Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, they sent up a video guy, and they video me holding a baby in NICU. And I all of a sudden sing to the baby, "You are my sunshine." And I'm loving on the kid, but there was nothing unique about that because I always feel so close to them and enjoy that. And that was sent out by the hospital, and it's been wild since then. The hospital told me just last week that we have reached 1 billion views worldwide.
So, David, what's one wish you have for this holiday season?
I would wish that we don't ever again get a baby in whose mom was on methamphetamine during the pregnancy. I'd hope that we never have a mom leaving the hospital with a special needs baby and the dad is taken off. There are a lot of wishes I have, but I focus on the kids and the moms and what they go through. And when I say moms, obviously it includes dads and grandparents and the siblings too. And so those are the wishes I would have for the new year, for Christmas season.
Amanda Avutu, and I'm a brand storyteller with Good Egg Branding.
So why don't you tell me your story, Amanda?
My story is about wanting to do something and not really knowing how to get started. I was following the crisis in Syria. I was really upset by the stuff that I was seeing on the news and wanted to find a way to help out. And so I was looking on Facebook to connect with some people and was finding opportunities to send stuff overseas. And my children and I had been making packages to send to the camps in Greece with some diversions for the children, and realized that there was a posting on our neighborhood Facebook page where somebody was clearing out an apartment for a refugee family that would be living in our neighborhood. So that was amazing. It was like, okay, you know, there's how wonderful that there is going to be refugees in our community and we can help support them here. So no one expected that to happen. And we didn't know where they'd be coming from, but, you know, whoever they were, wherever they were coming from, we wanted to help. So my family and I went to the apartment and we helped clear it out, you know, dust off the cobwebs and clean it out and make it a really nice, comfortable space for this family to land into. As we were doing that process, we learned that they'd be coming from Syria. So it was a really interesting opportunity for my children to have the experience of helping in a way that was remote and then helping in a way that was local. So we were just preparing for them to come, and I became a little bit preoccupied with the idea of food. You know, as we were clearing the empty cabinet and the empty fridge, I started worrying about what they would eat when they got here and asked the co-sponsoring church if I could spearhead the initiative to get them some food into the pantry. So I researched what Syrian food would look like. There's a lot of stuff that I didn't know. I went to Patel Brothers, and the gentleman who works there was so kind. He walked around with me with my list, and he was like, okay, this is where you get the orange blossom water. This is where you get the pomegranate molasses, and all the things that I just had no idea about. But I wanted them to have things that would make them feel at home when they got here, and food is home. When they got there, it was almost like we knew each other, but we didn't. We were waiting for them. I don't know if they knew that we were waiting for them. I don't know if they knew anything. I don't think that they did. We met them at the gate to their house, and we told them welcome, and they said hello, and we walked in together and just started to become friends. That's a slow process, but, you know, as the give and take worked, we talked through the Google Translate and learned a little bit about them, and they learned a little bit about us. And I think they really gravitated toward my family because I have young children, and a lot of the other volunteers that were there were older, and so it felt comfortable and familiar to them. And we just started visiting over coffee and cookies. We would get to know a little bit more about where they came from and what they needed, and started doing things with them to help them feel settled here, like going swimming and getting their daughter a leotard and a long sleeve leotard and tights and cutting off the feet so that she could be comfortable in the swimming pool. And the children were just so happy to be doing normal children things. And the parents were just so grateful to be welcomed into this community.
My grandparents were Holocaust survivors. And so for me, the idea of persecution has always been really personal. Although my relatives were not able to escape, they were separately brought to concentration camps and their spouses and children were killed. And met each other after the Holocaust. I'd always sort of wondered what would happen if they had been able to get out and if they had been able to rely on the kindness of strangers to rebuild their lives. So it was really personal for me to be able to be in a position where I could be in that place of refuge and offer assistance to a family who was able to skirt, for the most part, catastrophic disaster.
I understand that you've since helped them start a business at this point, correct?
Yeah. So as I was mentioning, when we would come to visit, they would serve us cookies. And the cookies are just remarkable. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. They're like these little sort of like architectural delights. They look like they're etched. And they're delicious. And they're unlike anything that anyone's ever tasted here. And so rather than encouraging them to get a job at the chicken factory or in some other labor area, we encouraged Rueda to try to start a business with her cuisine and help people learn about Syrian culture through Syrian food.
Can you tell us about it?
Sure. It's called Sweet Sweet Syria, and they have a website that will soon be e-commerce enabled, and so you can buy cookies online and have them shipped to you. It's sweetsweetsyria.com, and locally they're selling at Kavarna Coffee Shop and Ebert Coffee Shop, and people are just loving it. They email and they're like, okay, how can I get more?
Amanda, what's one wish you have for this holiday season?
One wish that I have for this holiday season is for people to understand that one person's actions can make a difference. I know it's a really trite thing to say, but, you know, I benefited from
the host family saying, hey, we want to host a refugee family, and their co-sponsoring church saying, hey, we want to co-sponsor with you, and New American Pathway saying, we're going to bring a family over. And I got to just respond to a Facebook ad and say, like, hey, okay, I'll come clean. We often hear that actions have consequences in a negative way, but actions have consequences in a positive way too. And it's really important to show up and do what you can and inspire other people to jump in. I think a lot of times when there's crises overseas, it's abstract, especially for young children and even for adults. And to have the opportunity to not have there be this divide of over there, there's trouble, and to really humanize it and see that, you know, this is a family that mirrors my own family. There's a mom and a dad and two kids, and you know, they're used to watching YouTube videos and listening to music, and they're not so different. I think it's really helped my family understand just how much alike we all are.
Kristen Back, and I am the co-founder and editor-in-chief of Gather Good. And what that is a digital publication that covers social impact in Atlanta. So covering nonprofits, social entrepreneurs, different causes that give back to the Atlanta community.
And where can our listeners find it?
GatherGoodATL.com.
All right, cool. Kristen, so tell me your story.
Sure. I have always been an avid cat lover, and Iggy is one of three cats, and he is also our little escape artist. He has gotten out a number of times in the 8 years that I've gotten to live with him. He's gotten to live with me. And so when I was in Asia last year traveling with my husband, he actually got out. He escaped while my husband's cousin was visiting and staying to take care of him. And so, you know, I wasn't too worried because he's gotten out before, but usually just for a few days or a week at a time. When he ran out, I was gone for 2 weeks. And for those 2 weeks, I had gotten back and started calling him and really seeing, okay, how can we get him to come home? And doing all the normal tricks in the book that we've done before, he did not come back. And so for a couple of weeks, I thought, he'll come back. And then after 6 weeks of time, you know, you kind of start to wonder, is he coming home? I live right off of Moreland, which is an extremely busy street. People fly down it. So, of course, I'm thinking worst case scenario, or it's wooded and he got in a fight. Well, fast forward 6 weeks after he's been gone, and I've kind of, you know, hoping that he will come home, but have lost a lot of hope that he will, I get a call from East Atlanta Animal Clinic saying, we have your cat. Is your cat Iggy? And I said, what? You have my cat? And I'm immediately crying, right? Because he's been gone for 6 weeks. And so I say to them, like, okay, I'll come right now. And they said, just to let you know, he's been hit by a car. Obviously, I'm very overjoyed that he's back, but also terrified of what condition he is going to be in. And so I rush over to the animal clinic, and they were actually closing up for the day. And so I walk in, and there's a man there, and Iggy is on the ground. They have him on a blanket, and the staff starts telling me a little bit about what they think his injuries are, which is a cracked left and right pelvis injury, or they assume because he can't really walk. His back leg has been ripped open pretty badly from being hit by the vehicle. Obviously, I'm in this moment of crying that he's there, crying that he's injured. And, you know, initially the man who was there, I thanked him and hugged him and said, you know, thank you so much for bringing him in. You could have just left him. You could have seen him got hit by a car and just left him. And I cannot thank you enough for everything, for you just bringing him in to the clinic. You know, he had said to me, he was like, well, it makes me feel so good to know that the person that has come, that you've come, and you're so glad to have him back. And unfortunately, our conversation did not last that long because I had to take Iggy to an animal hospital immediately. But I ended up going back to the clinic in East Atlanta because they had seen him first, and that was also, you know, a mile down the road from my house. So I go back to the clinic after a week of Iggy being in the animal hospital for treatment. I started talking to the staff, and I said, you know, did you get information from the guy who brought him in? Is he a client of yours, you know, who is this gentleman? I'd like to get in touch with him. And they tell me, oh, you didn't know. They were like, he's homeless. You know, he lives on the street, and he had told us that he was just outside the area where he was hit and just decided to bring him in. And come to find out that he had walked that over a mile basically from the area around where my house is all the way to this animal clinic. I'm immediately crying again because I feel devastated that this was somebody who really could have used my help and who I didn't help in the moment because I just didn't know. I never forgot about the man that went out of his way to help my cat and someone who really probably could have benefited from me giving back and helping him. So I look for him, but I have not been successful at finding him, unfortunately.
Kristen, what's one wish you have for this holiday season?
Living in the digital world that we're in, it's very easy to just kind of fold into that. And so my hope is that everyone can come together, whether it's with family or with friends, whether there are varying degrees of opinion or not, but just really spend time together and connecting and talking about all the good that actually does exist in the world. You know, like the man that helped Iggy, that's really my hope this year.
I'm Kenny Hill. I'm president of a nonprofit foundation that focuses on transitional housing.
Great. So why don't you tell me your story?
So one of the things that made me a better leader was when I embraced finding ways to give back, embracing generosity. One of the ways that I would do that spontaneously is whenever we go out to eat, me and my family, we would identify a table and we would ask our waiter or a waitress, hey, we want to pay for that couple or that family's meal. Don't tell them who we are. Don't tell them who did it. We just want to, you know, show some generosity and let them know that, you know, somebody said that, you know, they wanted to take care of your meal today. So one particular instance of this, we were actually at the Mellow Mushroom, one of our favorite pizza places. I saw a group of soldiers. They were dressed in fatigue, so they're reserve or active duty, but they're all eating together. And I said, man, this would be a great opportunity to do our generosity give. And my wife and my kids were like, yeah, they're soldiers. They serve the country. So I called the waitress over and told her what I wanted to do. And to my surprise, she broke down. She started crying in front of me. She broke down. She said, that is the nicest thing I've ever heard. And she says, I'm sorry. I apologize. I just wasn't expecting this. And I said, no, it's okay. I was like, yeah, is everything okay? She says, yes. But she says, that is just such the nicest thing. So I told her, I said, don't tell them who we are. Just tell them somebody said thank you for your service. I told her, bring me their tab. And I included a tip for her on it, too. And I said, you know, you have a great day as well. And just the smile on her face. And then we watched as she presented that to that table. And they were looking around. They were, you know, questioning her emphatically about who did it, you know. And then I think what I ended up doing is they ended up paying for another table's food. So it's a great thing. We've done it in all kind of restaurants, from, you know, sitting in Chick-fil-A to family restaurants. It's amazing just the power of being generous when somebody's not expecting to receive something. And the biggest thing is we get the biggest kick out of it of all.
That's awesome. And what a cool way for it to sort of get paid forward with the veterans, too. They wouldn't take it, you know, as the final. They said, no, we got to do something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if we'd have told them we were doing it, they probably wouldn't have accepted it. So we did it anonymously. And the waitress, like, was the one who probably got the biggest impact of it.
The cool thing about your gesture is, even if you can't afford to buy someone or a family a meal, you can afford to buy them a Coke or ice cream. There are all kinds of ways, big and small, where those sorts of anonymous gestures can play out regardless of your income, right?
That's right. And really, when I started off with this, I couldn't afford to buy anybody anything. So I used to just give kindness. I started with that, being as kind as I could to people. And that would catch people by surprise because so many people go through the day without somebody really showing kindness. So there's endless opportunities to be generous.
Kenny, what is your one wish for this holiday season?
my wish is that families would be together. And there's so many people separated from family. There's so many families that are just spread out because of where they live or where they work. And the holidays especially is a time where really being with family brings back memories of things you used to do all the time, or maybe when you were younger. It also reconnects us to kind of remember why family is so important. So the one thing I would say is if, you know, families be together, even if it's, you know, just for a meal, families being together.
I'm Brad Shaw, and thanks for listening to this episode of Crazy Good Turns. You can submit your ideas for extraordinary people or organizations we should feature through our website, crazygoodturns.org. And stay connected with us between episodes by following us on Facebook and Twitter. We're going to take a short break for the holidays, and we'll be back in mid-January when we'll announce the winner of our $50,000 grant for this season. The whole team here at Crazy Good Turns wishes you a very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, and we'll see you in the new year. As always, thanks for listening. Crazy Good Turns is audio engineered by Stephen Key. Music supervision and mixing by Score Score in Los Angeles. Research and editing by Martine Chaussard. And a special thanks to Megan Basinger. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to you all.